8:15. Good morning. Joining me now on the phone with a look at some of the development issues and projects in Summit County, I have County Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. A big, long meeting at the county council level this week with regard to Chapter 3 of the Eastside Development Code amendments. A lot to take in. What happens from here?
Well, boy, we got exactly what we were hoping for when we sent out, I think, 13,309 notices to property owners. We got a full house at the South Summit Middle School auditorium and went 6 hours on Wednesday evening. The discussion really kind of broke into two areas. The primary discussion was taking feedback from property owners about what the changes to the zoning map meant to them, you know, as a property owner. I think, you know, there's probably about two dozen specific properties that the council and staff were questioned on. We're going to be doing, you know, sort of a follow-up review of those particular properties and questions prior to going back next Wednesday to see if any of the concerns that were expressed have merit. And, you know, do we consider making some adjustments? Do we consider, you know, leaving the map as is? We'll be taking a look at that. There was also some concern expressed by a number of people about a definition that had been amended and refined. It was a definition dealing with outdoor recreation. More specifically, we have in the code right now an open space recreation use definition. What we did was take that definition and split it into two separate categories, a motorized and a non-motorized. The concern was from the public, and probably legitimately so, did that mean in certain cases that if I needed to or I wanted to, you know, ride my horse or ride my four-wheeler on my property, does that mean I have to go to the planning department and get some sort of permit, a low-impact permit or a conditional use permit? Yeah, you know, the obvious answer to that is no, but the fact that the question with the way that language is written, that people are asking, it indicated that we need to go back and further refine that so it's clear. We've since come up with a couple revised options that we'll be bringing back to council to consider and possibly even further refine on Wednesday. So it was a really, really long meeting, but it's a meeting that needed to take place. You know, this was probably the most important meeting to have people attend and provide that feedback. And that was set up for that. You know, this was the point where council needed to get that input. Now, at the end of that very long meeting, the public hearing was closed, which means we move from that input portion to the council deliberation, and we'll be doing that in Colville next Wednesday. Does that mean that council couldn't potentially open it back up or schedule for a public hearing? They could. I think we'll find out whether or not they want to do that or whether they want to move towards taking an action on Wednesday. So that's kind of where we are with that. It
okay.
was a good meeting.
Let's move on with regard to the Colby School. Again, the Summit County Council upholding the appeals. So the development project for that will not happen, at least as presented. So any update there? I guess the next step, if they wanted to move forward, they could present a new application or they could keep with this plan and take it to Third District Court. Are those the options?
Yeah, well, council has issued their findings, and we're in what I'd probably call a temporary holding pattern to see what the next step will be. No specific new updates to give you other than the fact that we'll probably have knowledge of what that's going to be here very shortly. But as of now, nothing new to report.
Yeah. Is there a certain time frame where a lawsuit would have to be filed or no?
I believe there's a 30-day period where this could be taken to the next step, which would be Third District Court.
All right. And then with the Woodward-Gagosa project approved, does that mean that they're in pulling permits at this point?
Well, same sort of thing. Council issued their findings for the Camp Woodward project at the same time as they issued their findings for the Colby School. There would be a 30-day period by which the appellants of that project could file with Third District Court. I'm not sure if that will actually happen. It could, so we're in a similar holding pattern there. To my knowledge, as of this morning, I don't believe we've actually received a complete building permit application package, but I would anticipate that that would be coming here very soon with springtime, well, supposedly upon us. And I look out the window, it doesn't look very much like that, but I'm certain that the property owner is going to want to begin construction as soon as that permit has been reviewed and issued.
Any update with regard to the South Point application?
This hasn't been scheduled for the council action. The listeners might remember earlier this year, the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission forwarded a negative recommendation to council on that. So unlike, say, a Woodward or a Colby, this isn't an appeal to council. Council actually is the final decision maker. We call that role the final land use authority. With projects in front of them, the appeals of Woodward, the appeals of Colby, the Eastern Summit County zoning and code changes, they're just, in my opinion, really hasn't been that available agenda slot for a project of this magnitude to be scheduled so that council has the appropriate time to begin deliberating that and hearing from the property owner and hearing from the public. I would imagine that would be, now that we've got at least the two appeals behind us and possibly, you know, a pending decision on the east side zoning thing, I would imagine that we would likely be seeing that project back in front in a public hearing format in May.
Okay. Also wanted to talk to you about the Spring Chicken Inn. Apparently there's an application to redo this, but a challenge to get the sewer connected because it's on property that's owned by the railroad?
Yeah. Boy, allow me a chance to speak to my colleagues over in the building department. I'm not aware of an application for a remodel or work in the Spring Chicken Inn. It'd be interesting if in fact someone was moving forward to take something like that on. You're right. Probably the biggest obstacle over the last dozen years or so has been the problem that a portion of the improvements, the building, the restaurant, and specifically the kitchen area, as well as the existing septic system, encroaches onto Union Pacific right-of-way. And everyone, since I've been at the county over the past 5 years, there have been several interested parties willing to take on the, you know, a remodeling and a repurposing of that property, but they seem to have some issues and some problems kind of prevailing with that encroachment issue with the UNP. So maybe next time we talk, I can give you more of a specific update, but I'm unaware of a specific permit in my department as of today.
Okay. And then finally, just wanted to ask you, we had on earlier this week Blake Christian. He's the project manager with the Park City Base Camp. These are these housing containers that he's suggesting could be used as kind of temporary seasonal housing. Did you make time to go by and see the prototype?
You know, I feel so bad to have to admit, no, I didn't make the time to go take a look at them, and it wasn't for a lack of of wanting to. I really wanted to see if I could get over and see those, but with some of the items that we had in front of both the Planning Commission and the Council, I didn't have a chance to make it over from Colville. I did see photos of it, I was aware that there was a news story on one of the local Salt Lake affiliates. I've had them described to me. It's an interesting concept. Could they ultimately be used in some capacity here in the county without sort of a better idea from a code perspective? I'm probably safe in saying the answer would be maybe. I'm aware that at the state level, there are discussions about units such as this. I don't want to classify them as tiny homes, but it's sort of in that same discussion category as tiny homes. Is there a way that these can be permitted while at the same time making sure that the basic safety, health, building codes are met? So I know there are people engaged in those discussions, and those are going on at that state level. But in terms of them being used as a housing option in Summit County, maybe. I mean, probably the bigger question is where and how that comports with the zoning. And it's, again, going to be part of that discussion that we're going to probably be involved in deeper moving into this year, not to get out in front and steal Jeff Jones's, announcements and never steal Jeff's thunder. But, he is scheduling to go back to the county council here in the very near future to attempt to wrap up the housing needs assessment and get to a point where we could have that document refined and adopted. That's going to be the springboard for an affordable workforce housing strategic plan that he will be leading with us over at the Summit County and for the commission and the council. These sorts of potential solutions are something that we have to talk about. And again, even if they're on interim basis, I think that these are valid questions that we should be talking to the Planning Commission and the Council and the community about.
Yeah, so some are calling these glorified mobile homes. I mean, is that the definition that the county uses? Are tiny homes the same thing as a mobile home? And are there zones in the county that would allow something like this?
Well, there's three food groups or housing groups, in terms of the code that I'm aware of. One is a home that, or a residence, a residential dwelling that meets the International Residential Code. Then there's another housing group classification, and those are those units that are exempt from the International Residential Code by virtue of the fact that they meet specific HUD standards for manufactured housing. We used to call those things mobile homes, but they're now probably better categorized as HUD exempt housing, manufactured housing. The units that, or those dwellings that are not IRC or HUD exempt, are probably best categorized right now as some form of a recreational vehicle, and I think that's part of the discussion that's happening at the state level. And I want to be careful with Mr. Christensen's units because I'm not familiar with them enough. My guess is they're probably in that third category. So they're probably not at this point a mobile home. Could be wrong, but they're still probably somewhere in that recreational vehicle classification. Obviously, these things don't have wheels. It's not like you're going to take these things to Smith Morphouse or Ledge Fork and camp with them. But when you start applying sort of those definitions, they're probably more akin to that. I think there's going to be, just because of the housing problems that we're having and our ability to be nimble with creating some solutions, and again, short-term, medium-term, and long-term, we may be having to look at products such as this to help fill those needs. So we get asked about them often. There seems to be interest out there in the broader community and the industry. I don't think the Planning Commission and Council finish this whole housing strategy without considering whether or not we could possibly use dwellings like this to help address our need.
Okay. Pat, I'm going to leave it there. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for talking.
It's Pat Putt, Summit County Community Development Director. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as one of the fastest growing counties in the country, there is no shortage of topics to discuss in Wasatch County. Joining me now on the phone with an update on some of those, I have County Manager Mike Davis. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Leslie.
So one of the recent topics we've been talking about here has been Brighton Estates. We've talked with the building department official. We've talked with the fire chief. We've talked with a couple of the property owners of the Brighton Estates Property Owners Association, who are frustrated that the Wasatch County Council dissolved the special service district that the county had actually asked them to form. So talk to me a little bit about the process. Why did the council dissolve this?
My understanding is when it was formed, one of the conditions was that within a certain period of time, the district would come up with the funds necessary to do the studies and engineering to do the things they requested the district for, and that didn't happen.
My understanding is that they sold water shares there and came up with about $110,000 and had done a number of studies.
None of that was given to the district to do the necessary studies. They had engaged an engineer, and if that money was raised, which I'm not aware of, none of that was ever given to the district to do the studies.
So I guess just why not let the process, though, finish out? I mean, there was a deadline, and that was 2018?
There's also a faction of homeowners there that wanted it dissolved. So there's several factions of groups in Brighton Estates. They are not all on the same page. And I guess the council listened to the one group after the time period passed and said, yeah, we're going to dissolve it.
So could it be reconsidered, I guess, because you've gone to someone's gone to the trouble of actually forming the thing?
It could be reconsidered, and there is a current lawsuit on the issue of whether or not the district was dissolved legally. And so the lawsuit's got to play out first before there could be a reconsideration.
All right. Any idea when that might happen? Have you heard? I know that there are motions to dismiss from both sides.
There are. And the last I heard, that's in the judge's hands, so they're just waiting for rulings from the judge. And if the judge does not rule on a dismissal, then it will go to trial. And I imagine the trial would be a length of time.
All right. Some residents, I should say, because you're right. There are factions there. But some have said, you know, that many of those are second homes. They are paying residential property taxes at, 100%. Wasatch County is estimated to collect $120,000 every year from Brighton Estate property owners. And yet they say they receive no services. So that doesn't seem fair. How can the county help here?
Yeah, I'm not sure what services they're not receiving because of their property taxes. Because all services of the county, recorder's office, clerk's office, all the factions of the county are available to them. What isn't available are road services, which are not paid by taxes, but which are paid for by B-class road funds, which we don't receive any on their roads. And so it's kind of in their ballpark. It was told to them many years ago if they would improve their roads to a minimum standard, that then those roads could receive tax money, but the property owners have not improved any of the roads. That was a proposed purpose of the district, was to improve the roads, and yet they couldn't get any money from the property owners to put into the district to actually improve the roads. So the district was formed as a shell, and nobody would do anything with it. So an opportunity is still out there, and there's nobody that's saying you can't go improve those roads. They absolutely can, and they're encouraged to do so, but that's been there for many, many years.
All right, but it sounds like you're going to have to get everybody on board, or at least a majority, huh?
And that's been the struggle is there will be a group that comes that wants a particular issue to be covered, then there's a group that comes that opposes it that's from the same development. And so we've never been able to get the groups together on that, and some of them are litigious on the issue, and some of them sit back and, you know, some of those properties sold for just a few hundred dollars 50, 60 years ago. And those families don't have means for some of those things. And so I think the council is trying to weigh those options of representation and not only represent those that have a lot of money and are suing us, but try to represent all the property owners there. And finding the middle ground has been very difficult for the county.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of thought that these lots are now next to the $36 million that Park City paid for the open space there. And it, at one point, I guess, could be as valuable as some of the property that we see just here on the Park City side there at Empire Pass. So, I mean, that's kind of the battle here. Does it become a luxury resort?
Right. Part of the value of Empire Pass is that of the cost of putting the road in and developing the property, there were millions of dollars that were put in to develop Empire Pass. None of that has been done to Brighton Estates, and what the county's trying to encourage them to do is put the money into the development to raise it to the same level of standard as an Empire Pass, and you will have the value, but they're looking for something else that we haven't been able to figure out on that. And we try to work with the landowners, and some of them work with us, and some of them sue us. So,
yeah. But again, I mean, then the county council takes away their opportunity to do that by dissolving the district, the service district, which was the means to be able to make that happen.
Yeah. And it was the contractually the condition when it was created was that within a couple of years that the money would be raised and given to the district, and again, that was not done. And so as a condition, they then dissolved the district. So it could come back.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Mayflower. That property line also borders there on Brighton Estates. They are, however, set up to have Wasatch County services like fire, water, emergency services, and roads.
Not in that area right there. That area is not part of the proposed development at this time. And several years ago, all of those services were offered to those properties up in there. They will have to pay for them to get up there. And if Mayflower or Brighton Estates, for that matter, wants to pay for those services to get up there, that certainly is available, yes.
And I guess if Brighton Estates then was developed, then does that somehow devalue the Mayflower property down below? Is there a concern about that?
I guess we don't have a concern with that, and I'm not aware that Mayflower, the Extel people, have a concern with that. It's not been brought up to us at any rate.
Mayflower will be serviced in terms of the water it's needed in the sewer by Jordanelle Special Service District?
It will, and the area that's up by the Brighton Estates is not part of the district at this time. It could be. But also Extel has purchased the water reservations from the JSSD to facilitate doing that, and they've been paying on those reservations for several years. So, again, there's been a lot of money on the part of the developer paid to bring those services to their property.
So could Brighton Estates be part of the JSSD?
That's certainly a potential. It is.
All right, but nothing been discussed about that? Or
It has not. Not that I'm aware, they would simply petition for annexation, and that certainly is a potential.
All right. The new Jordanelle Parkway, this is part of the big, large Mayflower development. Basically, it connects, U.S. 40 with State Road 248?
That's correct. They're at the Mayflower exit where the fire station and Stillwater development is. It would start there and essentially go around the lake and intercept at the Browns Canyon Road on the north.
All right. So what's the timing on this? When does construction on that start?
The engineers are working on the drawings right now. The county has not received those yet for the review, and we've not issued a permit yet. It's anticipated that that will be this summer, however.
Now, is it a state road or a county road?
That is a county road, and the county does have fee title to the easement to the road.
All right. And then if it got started this summer, how long do you think it would take to build? I mean, it would be done?
They think they could be done this fall.
Wow. Transportation. Park City's electric bus technology advancing, and they plan to bring in some climbing electrical charges buses this fall that could give longer distances and steeper climbs. Anything happening between Summit and Wasatch County and Park City in terms of mass transit between the two communities?
Yes, and we have met several times with Park City and with Summit County on this, and Wasatch County is now looking to Mountainland Association of Governments to proceed with a study on proposed transit and transportation issues in Wasatch County on a regional basis. And we're right now working with Heber City and Midway and then the unincorporated county to come up with the funds to fund the study that could precipitate putting together plans of how these transit or transportation systems could work in the future regionally. So, yes, we are working on that right now.
Yeah, and I know that here in Summit County, or at least the Park City area, one of the issues is finding a piece of property for a park and ride for, you know, basically for people to park and then grab a bus. Does Wasatch County even have, property like that, that could happen?
We do. Mm-hmm. I think the study will tell us a little more of how that can work, but we have been looking at public areas that we could use for parking, and it has been discussed. In the past, they've even looked at some private entities, like some of the grocery store chains, to see if there could be some drop-offs and a potential area to park and ride a little bit off of those. So there's some options there, and we hope that the study will help us kind of direct us in a way that will let us plan better for the future on those issues.
All right. Wanted to ask you about the open space bond resolution. The county council recently passed this 4-3. What will this do?
What this will do is it will put it on the ballot for this fall to vote on securing a bond to purchase either outright purchase property or the development rights of property to maintain open space in Wasatch County. The amount of the bond, they ultimately, the open space group is looking for $15 million, but they may do it in segments and may do $5 million this year and then look for, within a year or two, do another $5 million and then a year or two, another $5 million and do it in steps rather than a full $15 million, but that's not been determined yet.
But the authority, the bonding authority, would be up to $15 million. Is that the idea?
I believe that's going to be how it's going to be presented to the voters in the fall. They haven't put the resolution together yet, but they have voted to proceed with it.
Yeah. We tried to talk with County Chairman Greg McPhee. He was one of those who voted against it. And I hate to have you put words in people's mouths, but I guess why was there reluctance to at least allowing residents to have a say in whether or not they wanted to tax themselves? Why would a county council member be against that?
I can only say that there was some discussion of whether it would be best to have the citizens present a petition to the council or just go ahead with the council initiating the ballot initiative. And I think there was some feelings that it might be best to have the residents present the petition to the council so that they could then proceed with it. So it was a semantic type of a thing, and without speaking directly with them, I wouldn't want to comment as why or why not they didn't. But that was part of the discussion.
All right. So what are the next steps here? I'm guessing there's got to be a lot of education and the details of the tax impacts laid out.
Absolutely. Well, not just the tax itself, but also what they're going to do with the tax. And so the open space group needs to put together its plan of how it plans to use the money and where its priorities are going to be for purchasing of open space or development rights. And so that can be a part of the package as the voters look at that and can make a determination, yes, we want to participate and we're willing to put money into the system. So there's a bit of work that they're, and they are working on it. I know the committee's meeting frequently. They were 2 nights ago, I think they were meeting here in the building as I left the building, and so I know they're working towards that.
All right. The county attorney, the county council, all, I believe you as well, recently received a letter signed by 8 residents asking the county council to decline to pass an ordinance amending the general plan and to decline approving that rezone that was requested by Megan Probst to move the boundary of the southern planning area. In this letter, it was dated March 23rd. They lay out 5 reasons why the county council should not approve the rezone and general plan amendment. When will the county council discuss this at a public meeting?
You know, I'm not sure. I have read the letter, and I know that it is being looked at and discussed, and but I don't have the date or time when they are going to do that. That would have to be set by them, and I have not heard when they're going to do it yet.
Has the county attorney advised the council on this at all?
Not that I'm aware of. I have not been involved in any discussions with that yet.
The first reason listed in the letter says that the county council can't vote on this, well, until November, because in the general plan, it can only be amended once a year in November. So would the county council, is the county council waiting to vote on this until November?
You know, they haven't indicated to me one way or the other on it. It's certainly something that needs to be resolved. But I have not yet heard what their plan is to do that.
Okay. Right now, I mean, the vote has not been taken. Is that correct? There was just a public hearing?
The vote to change the planning areas has taken place. There has been no vote to change any zoning or anything like that yet. So there's nothing has changed down there other than a theoretical boundary on what planning area a particular parcel's in.
Okay. And does that change the general plan then to do that?
It could potentially change the general plan. So I've got to wait until the county attorney can really update me as to how that works, because I understand her argument. I'm not sure I understand the full implementation process of what they voted on. So I've still got to look at that.
All right. Finally, wanted to ask you, there were some tours of these housing containers, as they're being called. Did you have an opportunity to walk through the prototype?
We did not have an opportunity to walk through. We have had a proposal on a development in the Jordanelle area that has not shipping containers, but that same concept of using modular construction of large boxes. And we've not been favorable to the things we've seen yet. Some concerns on the costs and some other things as opposed to that, and also some concerns on whether they can be constructed somewhere and meet all of the requirements of state building codes. So we are looking into it. We weren't able to come look at the units, and I did see the article, was very interested in the article, but we couldn't make it over. But this will be something we will be discussing as well.
Yeah. So where is this proposal for that you do have an application on?
This would be in the Area C, which is up kind of in the Victory Ranch area. It's the what's been referred to as the Talisman property, and it was a property that was involved in the JSSD lawsuit several years ago, and which lawsuit was settled, and now the property is looking to develop, and this is one of the proposals they were looking at.
Yeah, any idea how many units they're talking about?
Well, the units up there, they have a potential to develop up to 2,000 units in that Area C. I'm not sure they'll be able to actually reach that number because of the physical constraints of the properties, but it will be somewhere, I would guess, in the 1,200 to 1,500 range. So that's a lot of units.
Wow, it sure is. And is that connected to the sewer and water system?
It is. It's connected to the sewer system, and those are the properties. That was the lawsuit was on the sewer plant. Those are the properties that are connected to that sewer plant, and it was built below the dam. So any of that starts up, that will facilitate the sewer plant opening.
Okay. Are we talking about the River's Edge property?
Well, no, this property is up on Highway 32.
Ah, okay. Okay. There, as I guess as you're headed the reservoir's on your left and this property would be on the right?
Yes, on the south of Highway 32.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't that open space? I mean, I know we got those trails there, or is that just temporary?
This would be to the east of that. Those trails are actually on development property and open space property, both. Most of that property is owned by Sorensen Development, and the property that we're referring to would be east of that. It's when you get to the top of the hill as you're climbing up from Highway 40, and you get to the top of the hill on Highway 32. It starts up in that area up there, and it's 2,000 to 3,000 acres of property.
Wow. Okay, Mike. Always good to talk to you. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
That's Wasatch County Manager Mike Davis. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:51. Good morning. Well, the Park City Museum offering a free Locals Day to come visit the newest exhibit. In the studio with details, I have the director of the museum, Sandra Morrison. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So Locals Day is when?
So Tuesday, April 17th. And we want to thank Sydney Reed for helping make the day possible. The museum's open from 11 until 6, so we have slightly shorter hours now that it's the off season. But yeah, come on by and see our latest traveling exhibition, Route 66. And it basically, explores that time period in the 50s after World War II when, people could afford a car and they got paid vacations, which was a new idea. And so they would, load up the family and, travel across the country. And Route 66, of course, went from California across the country. So it was a great trip.
How long does the exhibit stay?
So we'll have it till the beginning of May. So another month. Yeah.
Okay.
Come on by. And it even includes a 1965 Mustang. And I think everybody owned one because everybody that's come into the museum so far said, oh, I used to own one of those.
They still wish they did. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's very cool.
What else have you got coming up?
So then the next day on April 18th, on Wednesday, we have Susan Rue, and she's a professor down at BYU. She actually has a PhD in American history and is, Utah's foremost historian on what she calls the family vacation. And so she's giving us a lecture on Wednesday called Riding the Highways in the Family Car. And she'll, talk about how Route 66 was one of the many ribbons of highway that facilitated the long distance travel in the family car. And she's also... she wrote the book, Are We There Yet? The Golden Age of the American Family Vacation. But she's also working on a new book called No Vacancy, The Rise and Decline of American Motels. So she'll talk about, Route 66 and other highways that, basically the demand for lodging increased and started off being the motor hotel and got shortened down to motel.
Yeah, still a bunch of them in Flagstaff. When is that going to be?
That's on Wednesday, April 18th, and that's at our new building.
What time?
And so it starts at 5 until 6:30. Plenty of parking in Prospector, so it's 2079 Sidewinder Drive.
Okay, and again, you used to have to have people RSVP. You don't need to.
No, not anymore. Yes, because we have 1,000 square feet now, so we used to be able to squeeze 30 people in the conference room at the museum. And now, we have 70 and 80 people show up for our lectures. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Do you videotape those talks?
Sometimes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And try and post them sort of to Facebook and get them up online. So people that can't make it can enjoy them as well.
Okay. Yeah. And how is that new storage and education center working?
Fabulously, yeah. When we started building it, we were starting to get our lecture programs were starting to be popular and, we had a few times that it was sort of standing room only. And then as the building neared completion, we were just overwhelmed by the attendance. So it's been great. We've had about 6 so far. We had 90 people show up for the book signing, and that was for our new book about Pop Jenks, the photographer in Park City. So we were just so pleased that we could have enough room to fit everybody.
Great. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
The exhibit's there until May, so come on by. And then we're also working on a few upcoming events, partnering with the American Legion locally on the Memorial Day service at the city cemetery. And that's come out of our lectures on the B-18 bomber that crashed in November of 1941, and two of the airmen lost their lives in that crash into Iron Mountain. But, you know, there's no recognition of that at all anywhere in Park City. So we've been working with the cemetery, and so looking to dedicate something on that day. So more to come on that, yeah. And then we set the date for the historic home tour, and that's Saturday, June 23rd. So I'll have more on that as well.
Okay. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you.
Sandra Morrison is the director of the Park City Museum. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:56.